This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. Before I get started here, because it's dark now, I had some running around to do, so it's dark, so I'm going to lose all my notes when I start driving. So I'm just going to read you a quote. We're going to give this a run. I'm not going to have any notes. I'm just going to kind of talk, pretty much normally. This will be pretty normal for a podcast. But eventually we'll get back to talking about Harry Styles and the Vogue cover. For those of you who don't know, Harry Styles is a singer, a talented singer, good-looking guy. He did a Vogue cover where they dressed him up in dresses, and he did this Vogue cover, and he had been known as a fashion-forward thinker, so everybody was raving about how great this was that Harry Styles was on the cover of Vogue in a dress. More dresses on the inside, more pictures. Candace Owens, who's a conservative, came out with a tweet that said, "There is no society that can survive without strong men. The East knows this. In the West, the steady feminization of our men at the same time that Marxism is being taught to our children is not a coincidence. It's an outright attack." Okay, so then people got mad at her, and then Ben Shapiro had to come, you know, decide he was going to weigh in on her side, and he got involved, and he did a big thing on his podcast, yesterday, somewhere in there, where he was talking about that men and women have always presented different ways throughout. This is just something that happens. This is masculine and female. They present differently, you know, yada, yada, yada. They've always worn different type of clothing in every society, and how that, you know, if you do this, then you're sending signals, and yada, yada, yada. And I just listened to all of this, and I thought, okay, I guess I have to do the podcast on this tomorrow, because it seems an appropriate time, since I just finished doing World Kindness Day. We'll get back to that in a minute. I wanted to read you the quote. "There is no society that can survive without strong men. The East knows this. In the West, the steady feminization of our men at the same time that Marxism is being taught to our children is not a coincidence. It is an outright attack." Okay, so that's kind of the basis for that. I'm going to start driving. Then we'll visit about the week. And then we'll talk about that a little bit. And we'll just see how far I can get without notes. It probably would have been good if I'd organized my notes on this, but you know, this is all just me flapping my gums anyways. So, as far as this week goes, we had some successes this week, so yay. That worked out real well. Things moving forward, we're moving forward. That's pretty exciting. Got some things done that needed to get done. It didn't look like maybe we were going to, but then right here at the, this afternoon, we pushed forward. So hopefully that hasn't broken anything. It doesn't look like it has, which is good, because the guy who was doing the pushing for us is going to be gone next week. I'm out tomorrow, but it looks like everything is fine. So we seem to be good there. Writing is going fine. I am editing now, so I'm putting in corrections. I'll probably be doing that through the weekend. Then I start my read-through on book 13. Some people had some nice things to say about book 13. So at least the people I have seen so far. So that seems to be going well. I didn't quite end up where I wanted to be. I was hoping to be at about 75,000 words. And I think I ended up somewhere around 72 or 73,000, not quite there. And frankly, one of the reasons I didn't get there was because National Absurdity Day is tomorrow. fun stuff. Fun. At least I think so. I haven't actually tried everything on yet because I've just been scrambling to get this done. Because turned out to be a little more complicated than I originally envisioned. I chose a path to do something that was fairly intensive handwork. And, you know, once you're halfway in it, it's like, well, there you go. I did have to make an adjustment at one point because I ran the remaining hours. And as of Saturday, if I had done full out what I had planned, it was going to be another 10 hours. It was like, nope, I do not have an extra 10 hours this week. So we made some adjustments. You know, that's project planning, project management. That's what that's all about. So writing is good. Costuming is good. But I thought World Kindness Day went spectacularly well last weekend. It was fun. It was fun. I'm sure the three people who have listened to this podcast will have seen the costume by now, but for World Kindness Day, I wanted an image that would stick in people's brains that I could then conflate with the idea of being kind. Be kind, spelled B-E-E, be kind. And so what I did is I put together, and mind you, I had been planning this. I got the idea for this way back in February because I looked forward and thought, people, it's going to be crazy. As I mentioned on the video, it's going to be crazy because it was going to be the Trump election, but that was really before COVID hit. It was before George Floyd and all the race protests and riots and everything else. It was before mail-in ballots. It was before an election that was very, very close. You know, it was before all that stuff. I had no idea that when it came to World Kindness Day, we still wouldn't have a quote-unquote official winner because, you know, no one is conceding. So there were a lot of things that made this even more crazy. But I wanted an image that would very much stick in people's minds and that I could then attach to be kind. So I had decided what I was going to do is I was going to dress up as a drag queen bee. So when I was doing the bee costume earlier in the year, you know, you type in any kind of costume, it's just all these sexy costumes come up, and there was like a sexy queen bee costume. It is so ridiculous. It is just so ridiculous. But it is apropos to what we're going to be talking about today. So ridiculous. And it just made me laugh. And I thought, oh, okay, yeah, there you go. We're doing that. So I dressed up as a drag queen bee. And so I had this little sexy costume. I wore a full bodysuit underneath it. And fishnet hose with the lace tops and heels. And I mean, just the whole bit. And I had... obviously, it had breast cups on it because it was a sexy queen bee costume. And so I had gotten little stuffed bees, little plush toy bees, and stuck them in there. And I had this crazy yellow wig, and I had these crazy bee glasses, and I had taken a face mask and put little bees all over them. It was creepy looking. It was creepy looking, but at the same time, you know, it was a sexy queen bee costume. So, I was a bit surprised, not by the fact that women found it delightful. I knew that women were going to find it delightful for reasons that I have already elucidated on this podcast. And so from this systems level, systems analyst projections, I didn't think there was any way that women wouldn't find it delightful. I expected more men to find it disgusting than did. And I think what happened was because it was creepy looking too, that was enough to shift it more out of the reproductive domain into just creepy costume. And, you know, I'd be going by men and they're going, great outfit, buddy. Like, okay, well, thanks. Happy World Kindness Day. Remember to be kind. You know, I'm doing the bit. I think the funniest thing, I mentioned this on the videos too, but I think the funniest thing was, I didn't mention all of this. I'm trying to remember exactly what he said. It's this close enough. But I saw a guy on Saturday as I was walking out, and he said, I saw them back there taking pictures of you, because My friend, one of my good friends at Walmart, is a beekeeper. She wasn't there on Friday, so partially I went back on Friday to see if she was going to be there. She was there. She came around the corner, and I don't know if this is exactly what she said, but this was the gist of it. Oh my God! So, you know, she was just effusive over this costume. I was back in on Sunday to pick something up, and she was grilling me as to why I just wasn't wearing the bee costume the entire time I came to Walmart. She kept saying, "You look so cute in that." Well, thanks. Happy World Kindness Day. I'd take you home in that. So, you know, they're taking pictures, lots of pictures, lots of pictures. I'm walking out after all that, and this guy goes, "Dude," I looked over at him, he said, "I saw all those people taking pictures of you back there, and I thought you were some kind of a doll, and then you moved, and I thought, crap, that's a guy." So, you know, but no one was offended that at least said anything to me. Maybe there were people that were offended, but none of the guys said anything to me about being offended. They were all just laughing. And when I got home that first Friday, on Friday, before I walked in, my wife and my mother-in-law were in the living room, and my wife said, "Now, you know, Mom, this costume's a little crazy." She said, "Just be prepared for it. It's World Kindness Day, and it's a little crazy." I had showed it to my wife earlier, and she started laughing and smiling, and she gave her approval. So I walk in, and Nana looks at me, and she's like, "What are you?" But then when I went down to show the young lady who lives with us, because she hadn't seen it yet, Nana actually turned to my wife and said, "You know, I think I like that costume the best of any that Phil has done." So, you know, interesting stuff. We'll get back to that. Interesting stuff. So, okay. So Harry Styles puts on a dress. He goes on the cover of Vogue. Did I cover everything? You know, working. Oh, yeah. Well, tomorrow is National Absurdity Day. And 2 days, yesterday, tomorrow is National Absurdity Day. Yesterday was actually National Princess Day. So that can't be a coincidence. So I decided I'd do something. I told my wife that a couple of weeks ago and she said, "Oh, please don't." I said, "Listen, I will make this funny. It will be funny." And I think it's funny. It's funny. I've tried out a couple of the lines on a couple of people. It's funny. It just took me a little longer to put this together than I thought it would. So we'll be fine. But anyways, so Harry Styles puts on a dress and he wears like kind of a lacy top thing and pants, you know, kind of blousy pants to some award show. And everyone just thinks, "Oh, how great this is, because this is the cure for toxic masculinity." And then the conservatives are all up in the arms. Got to come to the defense of each other, and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so as someone whom just wore, in essence, a teddy with fishnet stockings, you know, to Walmart, of all places, I feel like I am in a place of some authority to speak on this. And I realize that some conservatives would say that it's not the same thing because I'm doing it as a joke. There is some truth to that. And there's a reason for that truth that hopefully I will remember to get back to. But for now, let's just start in on this. And we have to build from the ground up. So if you all have heard this speech anymore, I'm sorry. I will try to get it through it as quickly as possible. Okay, so we as human beings are a collection of systems. I just heard Elon Musk talking about AI, and talking about the fact that we have this limbic system on top of which is built this cortex. And he said it's like having a monkey brain that has a computer on top of it. And you would think the computer would tell the monkey brain what to do. But he said most of the time the monkey brain is telling the computer what to do. And he said it's ridiculous. He actually went on to talk about, he said, think of how much time we spend talking about sex, thinking about sex, planning how to have more sex. He said, when it's not even for procreation. He said, this seems ridiculous to me. And I thought to myself, says a guy who dated Amber Heard for a while. Maybe that cured him of it. Maybe. Maybe he finally adopted my philosophy that, yes, it's a subsystem. Take care of it so you can do a lot more productive things. But anyways, I think it is generally agreed on that we have, some people call it the lizard brain, some people, call it other things, that we have this limbic system that is very low level. And then we have a cortex, a frontal cortex, a cortex that is much higher level. The intelligence that it has is orders of magnitude greater than the limbic system. We have these things working together in us. And I'm not going to bother to say my opinion and I think, and that I'm just going to be declarative. So everything I say from here on out, you understand, is in general, on average, in my opinion. Okay, so just understand, on average, in general, in my opinion. Okay, so I think what people miss is the fact that it's not just a limbic system and a frontal cortex. There is this thing in this inside there that we very much inside us have a bent towards destruction. That we have a bent towards creativity and wonder and beauty, and we have a bent towards destruction as well. And that bent towards destruction is very, very powerful. In the Christian belief system, we call that flesh and spirit. There's a lot of examples of this in culture, angel on one wing, devil on the other, one side, devil on the other, etc. Good wolf, bad wolf, etc., 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 etc. So in my system, you have these really, really low-level systems that are guaranteeing your survival, guaranteeing the survival of the species. Then you have the flesh and spirit subsystem on top of that. Then finally you get up to your frontal cortex and all the decision and logic making systems. Having that in the stack, then you really, I don't think, can fully understand what's going on in human behavior unless you factor all three of those things in. So the first thing you have to address in terms of what's happening with Harry Styles putting on a dress, or me putting on a drag queen bee outfit and going to Walmart, the first thing you have to do is address the fact of what the low, low level subsystems are doing. And what they are doing is different between men and women. Fundamentally and profoundly different. And it is what makes men men and women women. I used to say, when you say I'm a man, what does that mean? And my answer would be, I have an X chromosome and a Y chromosome. And no amount of cloth is going to make my Y chromosome go poof. I have adjusted that a little bit because the biologists, the evolutionary biologists, tell me that in reproduction, there can be Z and X stuff and all those kind of stuff. But the key feature that separates into a binary sexual reproductive functionality, the key feature that separates is the gametes that are produced by the individuals. And supposedly, these kinds of gametes have been produced for 500 million years, according to them. So what that means is there's a pretty good foundation for dividing elements of the species into two groups, male and female. Now, I understand that there is some derivations in there of machinery not quite working right, etc., etc., so you can get intersex, then you can get interesting things. But we are specifically talking about gametes right now. So, I am a man, therefore I produce the gamete that is of the kind that it's small, it's mobile, it doesn't have much cellular machinery in it, and I produce a lot of them. Okay, I am a man. Period. Okay, no amount of cloth, no amount of color can change that. I am a man. As opposed to a woman who produces a larger gamete that has a whole lot more cellular machinery in it and is not as mobile. So, that's the dividing line, men and women. It's that simple. That holds across the animal kingdom. It holds across, according to the evolutionary biologist I've listened to, that it holds. That differentiation holds. And that's where the terminology man and woman came from. Now then, okay, as Ben Shapiro rightly notes, men and women have presented differently across all cultures. They do. So what is going on there? Why do we tend in every culture to view certain things, certain styles of dress, as more masculine or more feminine? Why do we do that? What are the mechanisms that are going on? I would maintain that the mechanisms that are going on there come directly back into those reproductive subsystems. I'm getting my mail, one moment, I can't talk while I'm doing this. Same time. Directly interfaced with the reproductive subsystems. And specifically, I think our presentation, come on, window, go up, there we go. I think our presentations that we find in culture of the way that men and women dress differently, and where we have this binary representation that in cultures you can usually point to something and say that's more masculine, that's more feminine, even though it may vary from culture to culture, because the Scots wear kilts. Okay, that's fine. In Sulu, they wear A-line skirts. That's their dress. When they're really dressed up, the men wear A-line skirts. Knee-length A-line skirts. They're made out of suit material. But within that culture, that is recognized as a masculine piece of appearance. Okay, so the question is it truly masculine? Why is it considered masculine? And why do men and women dress differently? I would submit that the reason that men and women dress differently is as follows. We as men are visually triggered. Okay, we are producing enormous amounts of sperm, 1,500 a minute on average. A minute, 1,500 a minute, if I've got my figures correctly. And so our subsystem that produces all that stuff is looking to get rid of some of that. And so it's constantly running evaluations. And the question that is constantly running in a man's mind in the background, if he lets that stuff build up, is can I inseminate it? Or can I have sex with it? Not because the man is necessarily interested in helping raise children. He might be interested in producing children, but he's not necessarily interested in the responsibility of raising children. He's just looking to spread his seed. And as I said to a buddy last week, I said, you know, a lot of times men just spread their seed everywhere, and occasionally some of it gets to the right place. And he bust out laughing, and we laughed about that. Okay, so men are constantly on the lookout. This subsystem's running in the back trying to identify targets for these gametes that we're producing. That identification runs along certain lines. There are things that seem to be universal in terms of what men are looking for. One of the things seems to be a hip-to-waist ratio. I think it's of 70 or 75%. Not how heavy a woman is, or how big, but the hip to waist ratio, the curve, that seems to be something. Breasts are something else that catch men's eyes. Obviously, any chance to potentially see where the insemination port is, that catches men's eyes. You know, hair, symmetrical facial features, there's all those things that factored in. But it is being visually driven. Women pick up on this very, very early on. I could give you examples, but this is going to go long, so I'm just going to trundle over the stuff. Women pick up on this very, very early on. I was having breakfast with a friend today, and he was saying, you know, well, women are driven by their desire for sex, too. A few, 7%-ish, from what I've read. What women are really driven by, in my little world, is a desire to lower their anxiety level, whether they are aware of that or not. They're driven by a desire to lower their anxiety level. If you say that women wish to produce children simply because of oxytocin or the pleasure that they get when they are impregnated, you got a couple of problems with that. One of the problems is that women can get impregnated just fine without experiencing any pleasure at all. Secondly, if oxytocin was the primary driver of having babies, you would see more babies when societies become safer. So when societies become more advanced, when they are safer, when there's opportunities for women, you would not see any decline at all in the number of children that women have, because there would be no reason for a decline. But in fact, what we see in all industrialized nations, in all nations where women are safe and when women have lots of options for how they want to choose to live their lives, the birth rates go down. So from that, and from just watching and listening, I have concluded that in fact, the primary driver for women to have children is anxiety. Now then, my friend this morning objected to the term anxiety. I said, well, you can call it, you know, anything you want. It's basically whatever you have when you have a human being that does not have testosterone. Because testosterone fundamentally changes. It makes us the disposable species. Because we will throw ourselves in front of the elephant. You know, we will go riding without a helmet. We will take these extraordinary risks to life and limb. So you basically have these men over here that are producing a gajillion amounts of sperm, and some of it getting to the right place. And then you have women who are trying to protect, they're trying to nest, they're trying to create children, they're trying to get, someone to guard them. You know, they're trying to somehow deal with the level of anxiety in their life. And so they recognize that men are visually stimulated, and so they dress. And there's a reason the fashion industry is primarily about baby feeders and insemination ports. When you look at how costumes in the fashion industry, how dresses, how haute couture is designed, there is usually a pattern where we are drawing the line, the eye, to the vagina, the insemination port, or we're drawing the eye to the curve between the waist and the hips, or we're drawing the eye to the breast, because all of this, you know, the breast and the insemination ports, obviously are involved in reproduction. So in many cultures in the world, the women dress in such a way to get attention, potentially attract a mate, and then other women watch how women dress. And then if something seems to be working, they adopt that as well. So I think that's the reason that you have this, usually this bifurcation in dress in cultures. Because women are trying to get identified as feminine because they're trying to attract the males. And they're all trying to do that among themselves. And then men are trying at the same time to identify males. And both of those things go hand in hand. And so there's a certain agreed upon set of characteristics and colors. And they have nothing to do with objective reality. All they have to do with is kind of a cultural set. And I have no problem with calling those things masculine and feminine, because that's the colloquialism that we use. But neither of those things actually make a man or a woman. Because in my little world, a man or a woman is determined by what type of gametes you produce. So for me, what that does is that introduces a tension. So that introduces this tension because we have this appearance thing that we have all these kind of agreed upon conventions with that don't really have to do with the underlying truth of what is a man and a woman. So you have these agreed upon conventions that we all just kind of wink and nod at, even though we know it's not really true. That tension forms a humor point because you can juxtapose two things against it. You can expose the fact that that agreed upon convention is just silly. That then produces a humorous response. So for women especially, who know this is all just convention, who know deep down in their souls that they're just doing it to attract people's eyes, and they wouldn't do it if, and they're not really that happy about some of them doing it. I mean, there was a lot of joking on Friday about heels and how they hurt and all that kind of stuff. Because women understand it's an act. They understand it's a costume. And they understand intuitively what they're doing. So when they see a guy, when they see a guy walk in with anything that approximates that, and they know the guy is not competition for them, that's really important. They know the guy is not competition for them. That's funny. Because they see it. Now, the reason it can evoke a disgust response in men is because the men just make the visual conclusion very quickly. They see the triggers. Oh, that must be a woman. It's like the guy who told me, dude, I thought you were a doll and you started moving, you know. They see the triggers, they conclude quickly, and then they realize, wait, that's a guy. And then it's like, ow, 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 for heterosexual men. So that's why you sit in this disgust delight paradigm where you're delighting women by doing these crazy costumes that they don't think any man would ever wear. And you disgust men at the same time. That's the interaction. Now, having said all that, then the question is, what is real? And I was actually going to do a PSA. I was going to do a PSA on the Queen Bee costume. And maybe I've talked about this, I can't remember. But I was going to show a picture that is called The Tyranny of Images. It's from an impressionist. I'm not going to get his name right. René Mesurat. And he did a picture, and it's a lovely picture of a pipe. I mean, it's beautifully shadowed and everything. There's this pipe. It's on a yellow background, wooden pipe. It's right in the center of the picture. And there is an inscription in the bottom in French. And the inscription is, this is not a pipe. Now, apparently, he got a lot of flack for the painting. People are saying, what do you mean it's not a pipe? Of course it's a pipe. It's a pipe. It's a pipe. But the painting was called The Tyranny of Images for a reason. This is my interpretation of why he called it The Tyranny of Images. None of us actually live our lives in a material world. Some will question whether a material world actually exists. Some will go so far as to say that it's all existential, that we are all in our own subjective worlds, that everything around me is just, I manufacture from my mind. But let us say for a moment that there is a material world. I am actually sitting in my garage, in my car, looking at my little recorder, and I'm recording this podcast. These things actually exist. This car, this recorder, this garage, this house, which I am grateful for. So I still don't live in that material world. And the reason I don't is because my eyes, my ears, my touch, my taste, my smell, my sense of body position, all of those things are funneled into my brain, and then my brain is actually building a simulation. It is building a simulation of the world that is influenced by my emotions, that it's influenced by my experiences, that it's influenced by my belief systems, that it's influenced by the whispers that are coming from my flesh, that it's influenced by the whispers that are coming from my spirit. That simulation in my brain is not an exact copy. It's not an exact copy. Okay, it has all of these other factors in it. And that's what I'm actually living in. This is where it gets dicey. Since I'm actually living in a simulation that is produced by my perception of the images that I am taking of the real world, you can put an image in front of me, like a painting of a pipe, and that will be accepted into my mind with the same truth and veracity as a pipe. That is the tyranny of the image. It usurps. So when this painter painted this, it's a wonderful observation. And he says, this is not a pipe, and people get mad. He is proving his point. Because his response was, but it's not a pipe. I can't put tobacco in it. I can't smoke it. Bringing this over then, I put on a drag queen costume on Friday that looked from the back like I was a woman. It didn't from the front because I had the weird glasses and I had little bees stuck in the cups and things. But from the back, if you didn't see me walking too much, you could have concluded that I was a woman. But I'm not a woman. The reason that I'm not a woman is because in the reality, in the material world, I produce gametes that are small, that are mobile. I produce a lot of them. They don't have much cellular machinery. That makes me a man. That is the truth of it. That is the function that I perform in the reproductive sphere. All of the appearance is simply layered on top to facilitate men's targeting mechanisms or to facilitate women's ability to attract men or to attract other women, depending on what they, you know, or what their proclivities are. So all of that appearance level, it's very easy to confuse with the reality. And in fact, Ben Shapiro did this when he was talking. You know, he was talking about how appearance, there's masculine appearance and feminine appearance and that kind of. And if you want to use those words, those are generally accepted words. But there's no such thing that is a man appearance and a woman appearance. There's no such thing as that. It's simply appearance. And your appearance does not dictate the type of gametes that you produce. So if you understand it from that level, Harry Styles puts on a dress and you say, so, what's the big deal? It's just cloth. It's just color. It doesn't mean anything. Now then, there are two ways that you can violate these conventions. Okay? The way I violate the conventions is I do it for humor. And Ben Shapiro, you know, made note of the fact that men have been dressing up as women, you know, for humorous comedy stuff for years and years and years. Some like it hot, Marilyn Monroe, David Bowie, you know, for years and years and years. Men have been dressing up for comedic effect because it's funny. It's funny because there's this dissonance. But that none of that makes them women, just like it doesn't make me women. But there is another level as well, that there are men who are attempting to dress as women to exercise the type of attraction that women exercise when they dress up. They're trying to tap into those reproductive urges. Okay, well, that's fine too if they want to do that. That's not what I'm attempting to do, even though I know that sometimes it will be confused as that. That's not what I'm attempting to do. So you've got these two things going on. Harry Styles looked like he was really trying to work it. I think, you know, he's looking at the camera like, oh, I'm so hot. You know, okay, so fine and dandy if Harry Styles wants to look at the camera and say, I'm so hot. Here's what I will guarantee you. I will guarantee you that Harry Styles has no lack of women who will tell him, oh, you look so hot in that dress. And who will be more than happy to throw themselves at Harry Styles because he looks so hot in that dress. Does that mean that Harry Styles is redefining what it means to be a man, redefining masculinity? No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And here's why. Oh, and I got to wrap this up because this is really long, but this is important. Here's why. Here's the punchline. Harry Styles has women throwing themselves at him because he's Harry Styles. First of all, he is an attractive man. Second of all, he is a singer. Third of all, he is famous and he has a lot of money. So he could do pretty much anything and women would throw themselves at him. So the fact that he wears dresses is not really what's making women attractive to him. And in fact, even though they think that's why they're attracted to them, I will pretty much guarantee you that if Harry Styles actually settles down and gets married to a woman, that once he gets married to her, you're going to see some of that behavior start to slack off because she will gently start to nudge him away from that. And especially when they start having children, she's going to start nudging him away from that. Because at that point, he needs to be the ox and he needs to be the guard at the gate. And she's not really going to be that thrilled with him flouncing around in skirts. Because there is a dynamic that is going on here that is deeply biological. And this fundamental difference in us, guys, on average in general, being willing to throw themselves in front of the elephant, and women, on average in general, looking to nest and to birth children. And even if they're not going to birth children, looking for someone who provides a layer of protection for them. Months and months ago, I told my wife, yeah, because the role of the man is to throw himself in the front of the bullet. You know, if there is a bullet and someone shooting. And my daughter said, you bet it is. Because that's it. We are, as men, the disposable species. So the question is what is going to happen if more men show up on the cover of Vogue in dresses? And the answer is nothing. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing. You're going to get some repercussions of some guys who are going to try it, but it ain't going to get very far. And it's not going to get very far for exactly the same reason. That when parents try to raise their kids in a gender-neutral environment, that they often find themselves thwarted. Years and years and years ago, I was listening to some couples, and they were talking about, we were going to raise our children in a gender-neutral environment. We were so happy, you know, we'd buy Barbie dolls for our girls and then use them to play house, and then we bought Barbie dolls for our young boys, and they used them for swords to whack on each other. Because that's it. Now, I tell you the one way you can make all that go wrong, and that is if you take boys, this is so long, I'm so sorry. If you take boys and you convince them early on before that testosterone really kicks in that they really should be girls, and then you start putting on hormone blockers and stuff, then if you do that on some kind of a mass basis, then you would really threaten masculinity. But it's going to take drugs. It's going to take serious intervention. And I still don't think it's going to happen. And the reason I don't think it's going to happen is because if women wanted men to be less aggressive, they would have bred it out of the species years ago. If you haven't seen the stories about the foxes that were domesticated in Russia simply by picking the foxes that weren't as aggressive, look it up. It's very cool. Wolves turning into dogs. What happened? Wolves turning into dogs. There were some that were less fearful. So when human settlements started getting, or human tribes started getting to the place where they were throwing the scraps out and the wolves would sneak in and eat them, they were less fearful, less aggressive. Those wolves survived, interbred. Pretty soon, all you got is dogs. Okay, so if women truly, on average, in general, wanted men to be less aggressive, they would choose men who were less aggressive. And this quote-unquote toxic masculinity, this aggressive male, you know, would die out. Now, granted, we as men are far less aggressive than our grandfathers. And so there is a shift, but there will come a point where women are not going to be happy if men just end up being milquetoast and they aren't defenders and they aren't wage earners, they aren't any of those things, and the ones who are will get bred more. And so the whole thing will balance itself out. So the fact that Harry Styles put on a dress and put on the cover, and obviously there's an agenda to try to cure the world of toxic masculinity, that's not going to work. And the fact that we've got conservatives who have their hair on fire because that happened, and they just think it's going to be the death of all men. Yeah, that's not going to work either. Okay, there's a reason that Gwen Stefani, who arguably could have pretty much any man she set her sights on, there's a reason that Gwen Stefani is agog. And I've just lost his name over her boyfriend. Rats. Sorry, buddy. Sorry. But, see, now I have to find it. Who is Gwen Stefani's boyfriend? Gwen there Stefani it is. Okay. Relationship with Blake Shelton. I just couldn't pull it out. I'm getting so old. There's a reason that Gwen Stefani went agog over Blake Shelton, even though she's a Californian, she's, you know, hip, she's on the front end, probably very liberal, yada, 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 yada. Might even been one of those women that didn't like toxic masculinity. And then she meets Blake Shelton. Big bear of a man who's a man's man, who's as masculine as can be, and boom, it's all over. Because there's protection. There's someone that'll keep the Visigoths from the gate. And they will have children, probably, you know. And so that type of man is always going to appeal to women because of the inherent anxiety they exist without the testosterone that men have and the need to bolster and gather resources. So, you know, in the first place, it doesn't matter that Harry Styles put on a dress, because that doesn't change the fact that he's a man. And in the second place, it doesn't matter that Harry Styles put on a dress, because it's not going to be the destruction of humanity. We've had men putting on dresses for decades and decades and thousands of years. It's not, we should just relax. If Harry Styles wants to put on a dress, let Harry Styles put on a dress. If I want to put on a drag queen bee costume and go to Walmart and make people laugh, I'm going to put on a drag queen bee costume and make people laugh. And it's National Absurdity Day tomorrow, so there'll be more of that kind of thing. But, I mean, everything is fine. It's fine. Okay? Let's not get caught up in all this stuff. Let's focus on being kind. Let's focus on being loving. Let's focus on making ourselves the type of person that when people come our direction and they see us, that invokes some joy in their hearts. Let us be those type of people that are known for our love and our kindness and our mercy and our gentleness. That's a goal. This is Phil Ferrand. I'm really sorry this was so long. This is Phil Ferrand. And I have made it home.